So, once upon a time, there was a hermit living deep in the mountains, far away. And the hermit was reputed to be very wise, partly for after years, decades of meditation practice. Decades of all kinds of life experience. And that if you went to ask questions or ask for help from this hermit, the hermit will always have just the right thing for you that just you needed to do. And so people would trek 2, 3 days into the mountains, the only way to find this hermit. So it's quite a process, almost like a retreat, traveling alone, finding your way through the mountains, deep in the mountains, finding the hermit. And with great anticipation, being with such a wise person, the hermit would ask you to tell about your life, and you would explain all the things that you thought was important for the hermit to know to really be able to advise you well. And you were struck by how deeply and well the hermit listened. There was a care and even a compassion and love that seemed to be there as the hermit really took you in and could tell that the hermit was really listening as you told your stories. And then the hermit was quiet for a long time. And you could see that the hermit was connecting to something profound and deep within, maybe to see what is it that would be the just the right response to you. And then it's when the hermit was ready, hermit would lean forward and whisper to you, "What is it that you are unwilling to know? What are you unwilling to pay attention to?" And the hermit bowed deeply and clear, the meeting was over. Leave. And perhaps you were a little bit perplexed. What kind of advice is that? I thought we get profound wisdom. But there's no wisdom here at all. So then there's a 2 and 3 day trek back. And that question, what are you unwilling to pay attention to? What are you unwilling to know? We keep coming back, and slowly, slowly, you would take a deeper and deeper look at your life, at yourself, until maybe it became clear to you what you were ignoring. And by the time you came out, you said, "Oh, that's what I needed to know. That was really important, what I just learned. That advice was really great." Turns out the hermit always gives the same advice to everyone. What are you unwilling to notice? What are you not paying attention to? So the ordinary dependent arising begins with ignorance. And not just the ignorance of simply not knowing something, But what maybe you're unwilling to pay attention to, or maybe even not willing to know. Because maybe knowing it, you would have to give up your cherished activity, what you're enchanted with. The pursuit of sensual pleasures at all costs. Holding on to opinions and stories. How your attachment to self was created. One of the attachments is the attachment to ignorance itself. So, with not really understanding, not being wise about attachments, the attachments shape, influence our mental formations, constructions. And if our mental activities in the mind are shaped by attachment, they influence the bias, the orientation, the of consciousness, how consciousness sees and knows and it becomes aware of something. We might think that consciousness is an innocent blank screen that sees everything, neutrally. But consciousness, whatever it is influenced here by attachment. So it affects what we see and what we're motivated to do, and it's so deep that it is that itself then affects the appearances and names of things. How things appear, also, we're not innocent. It's like the world out there just appears and we see it as it really is. There's deep forms of projection that we put on top of reality. And part of what we see is the painting that we paint on top of reality. When I was first in the monastery, one of the practicing a lot there, one of the things that amazed me, that had awe and was the kind of feeling, a sense, kind of a perception I never had before, that when I looked at a tree, I was painting tree all over the tree. There was something about how the mind perceived it that I wasn't just seeing the tree. I was somehow seeing it through my filter of what an oak tree, I don't know, is supposed to be. I mean, luckily my projection was accurate enough, or unfortunately, because then gets reinforced that actually we're seeing things as they really are. But I could feel this somehow, this veil that was part of the reconstruction process, perceptual process. And then how the six senses work are influenced by all this, which senses we pick up, which we use. Some of us give preferential treatment to our eyes, because that's how we discover what the things that we desire, the things that we have aversion for, things that we're afraid of. And that affects contact, what sensations we experience. If a person has an aversive nature, they pick up the things that are wrong in the environment, And that then predisposes them to unpleasant experiences. The contacts we have, the sensations that we experience, have a feeling tone. And that also, none of this is really innocent. You know, like, you know, just, you know, I'm just sitting here minding my business. I didn't do it. I didn't do it. Someone else did it. And feeling tones have a subjective quality to them. So they're also somehow shaped, and it's not just pure, like experiences are just purely painful or purely pleasant or unpleasant. They're a part of that experience is influenced by the attachments we have. I think meditators, sooner or later, who sit with pain will discover that with their attachments, the pain hurts more. Without attachments, it hurts less, and occasionally it doesn't even hurt at all. And then the feeling tone affects desires. Desires affects our compulsions. The compulsions affect what we start creating, identities we start making, attachments that now a whole other layer of attachments that begin forming. Becoming is a condition for birth. Not just something beginning to form, but we inhabit it, we become it, we are it. We're born into an identity, for example. And once we're born in that way, there's sickness, old age, grief, lamentation, pain, despair, and anguish. And if sickness and old age and death is referring to what happens to attachments, to the identities we hold on to, way before you physically die, the identities die, rug gets pulled out from under them, and then, you know, they're fragile. And so is the whole, this is, that describes, and to quote the suttas, the whole mass, the entire mass of suffering. So it begins with ignorance. The liberative dependent arising ends with, not with liberation. That's the penultimate step. The ultimate step is knowledge of liberation. Knowledge specifically of the attachments that have been uprooted, the attachments which have ended. And this is it's kind of a little bit odd that it's not good enough just to be liberated. You know, you think, you know, living happy ever after, usually liberated, and that's good. But there's this knowledge part that follows, this knowing. That's so important. So the liberative dependent arising ends with knowledge of liberation, understanding what's been ended, what's come to an end. There are two other very significant points in this liberative dependent arising that are can be milestones and turning points in a human being's life. And maybe for different people, different ones of these three make the biggest difference. So some of them. So the first is the second step, which is faith. And the second is knowledge and vision of seeing things as they are. And then liberation and knowledge of liberation. And they all involve knowing something. And to know something clearly enough that our life has changed forever. So faith is when it's really significant for people, some people, it's like now they know that there's an alternative to their suffering. There's an alternative to greed, hatred, delusion, an alternative to being attached, an alternative to spinning out in the karmic stream. And they know it, and they're inspired by that possibility. This is possible. And to have faith, enthusiasm, inspiration around this. And some people, their whole life changes. They decide, this is what my life is going to be about. This is the most valuable thing I can do. Knowledge and vision of things as they are is, again, knowing the inconstant changing nature of reality, the not-self aspect of it, and our experience of it, and then the dukkha that comes with clinging to it. Now, seeing, not just knowing that suffering can come to an end, but seeing things as they are is the real beginning of insight into the absence, the freedom from. It's like, oh, when you really see impermanence deeply, really see not self deeply, understand the nature of suffering deeply, it comes along with experiencing some glimmer, some taste of the absence of suffering. And so there's knowledge of that. Some people say it's a confirmation of the faith. The faith kind of believes in it or knows it in a certain kind of way. But it really gets confirmed, affirmed with knowledge and vision of seeing things as they are. And the vision part, it might be my interpretation of it, but I love that the vision in English can also mean having a clear sense of a potential, of a possibility. And that's one of the values of this seeing things as they are, is now I know my potential. Now I really believe and have confidence that I don't have to keep suffering. Suffering is not so solid after all. Suffering is not something to be attached to, enamored with, or enchanted with, or a negative enchantment. And so then there's a vision of what's possible. It's a vision. I can see it's possible to really bring suffering to an end. I don't know if I'll do it in this lifetime, all of it. But I know it's possible, and being on the path towards that is so fulfilling. It's a path of doing the work that takes slowly and beginning to let go, or release, awe, dissolve the attachments. And not doing that, maybe it's good for the people who are lazy, but not doing that is seen as an unwelcome option. Not to kind of work towards the potential of freedom and staying in our suffering is seen so clearly, this is not really an option anymore. So then practice continues. And if you take it all the way, then at some point it becomes bringing to an end, a total end. Four attachments. These things are called, sometimes called taints. The four taints. The attachment to sensual pleasure, comfort. Attachment to Self, attachment to views, and attachment to ignorance itself. And here it's, you know, so nice when these lists, two lists, when they're kind of going reverse order, they match up so well. Suffering begins with ignorance. And the end of suffering is the end of ignorance. And the end of ignorance is to understand, to see something. Now, not a few people, I think, would like to see, would like to believe that when they finally get liberated, it's the enlightenment, then they'll see something amazingly glorious, like the most glorious, profound, phenomenal thing, cosmic consciousness or oneness with all reality or infinite, boundless bliss. It's possible your liberation will come with that, but I wouldn't count on it. Don't invest in that kind of goal. It's not what, but the overcoming of ignorance is a worthwhile goal. Or having knowledge, and the knowledge that really is portable, that's really valuable, is not an experience. So that's why having an experience is being the thing. All experiences pass. Even great mystical religious experiences will pass. But understanding, it can stay with us. And the understanding that the earliest Buddhist tradition put greatest value in was to understand how we suffer, to understand the clinging, grasping, becoming, the attachments, to understand them so well that we don't buy into them anymore. We don't get tricked by them, get pulled into them. So this is not a tradition that emphasizes enlightened retirement, where you don't have to know anything anymore. This is a tradition that emphasizes that understanding how human suffering gets produced, how we contribute to it, this is what brings very important wisdom. It might not be as fascinating and enticing as great religious experiences. But I'd rather be at peace than have great religious experiences. Some of them are exhausting. And some of them, you know, to hold on to them and keep them going, it's just like crazy making. But it's not crazy making to understand, if we can see and recognize an attachment when it arises. It's not crazy making to understand that it's not worthwhile picking up that attachment. Because that leaves you with something that's much more modest than flashy religious experiences. And that is peace. Simple peace, simple, sublime happiness. that is the ending of the incessant chatter, churnings, wantings, spinning out of this mind. So the wisdom that we're looking for comes from mindfulness and paying attention. And we're supposed to become wise about the problems of our life, but wise about how we get caught. If you want to be free, become wise about how you're caught. And then you're less likely to get caught in the future because you know all the tricks. You know the whole game, how it's played. And you'll say, nope, no thank you. Not today. Done that. And I don't need to do that anymore. So this is one of the reasons why mindfulness is so important. Without mindfulness, we won't understand. If we just rely on going into pleasant samadhis, we'll have pleasant samadhis. But there might be no wisdom. And without wisdom about attachments, it's so easy for the attachments to get the upper hand. So what are you unwilling to pay attention to? What have you been ignoring? Either unconsciously or maybe as a policy. What are you not noticing? What do you need to notice to find your peace? And so the question is almost synonymous with, what do you have to accept? What do you have to really be present for with no conflict in order to find some peace? And why do this? Some people do it because they have no other choice. They think that, you know, suffering is no longer an option. Suffering has played itself out and it's no longer, can't do this anymore. Some people, it's because of love. The love that doesn't want ourselves to keep continuing to suffer and struggle, be anxious. The love that cares about others well enough, that wants to understand, be wise about these things so they can help others be wise. If we don't know the games, the tricks that suffering and attachments make, it's hard for us to know other people and their suffering. And if we want to love, care for others, it helps to know and understand, to know how to be attuned or recognize that potential other people have for freedom. To know it for oneself firsthand. And not a few people will, at some point, will continue doing this practice even after a lot of their own suffering has been resolved, they'll keep doing it not for themselves, but they want to serve others or support others or do it in order to be a better person in the world, more supportive for others, caring for others. So the best of who you are can come out and support these, your fellow beings, where there's so much suffering, so much. So we can do this work for love of ourselves, love of others. And for anyone to resolve their suffering, to be suffering free, or to reduce it by 50%, 20% even, it's pretty fantastic. And it's, and Buddhism is considered to be a noble endeavor. It's a worthy, noble project to come to the end of suffering. But don't just come to the end of suffering. Have knowledge, understanding about how the attachments come to an end. Then you'll know better know what to do next time you have an attachment, which might happen from time to time. And you might know how to support other people. You know where to support them. So you can touch or support or care for that part of them that where suffering begins. How could you know that unless you've been there yourself? And if there's no attachments, then there's no inhibitions or barriers to seeing people as precious, as everyone as family on this human globe. Everyone is important. Everyone is worthy of our care or our love. We can recognize that we can work for the welfare and happiness of others at the same time as we're doing it for ourselves. And the Buddha, when people were liberated, gave his final instructions to them. Seems like the final instructions the Buddha gave for anyone was not about liberation, was the step after that. And that is, go forth for the welfare and happiness of the world. Go forth for the welfare and happiness of the world. It's a nice thing to do when you're liberated, you're free. Of course you'd do that. What else could you do? So we come to the end of this retreat, end of this soul teaching. And these teachings, you know, kind of a little bit elaborate, 24 items to somehow that are connected to each other. But they're supposed to be descriptions of you. I neglected it say that at the beginning. You would have paid more attention if you knew it was about you. That's usually what interests people. This is you. That this all goes on in you. And what happens if you see who you are as these lists, as these operating of these dependent arising factors, instead of seeing yourself in terms of me, myself, and mine? It's a lot easier, a lot safer, and a lot less stressful. This me, myself, and mine, this idea of self and identity, for many people, is pretty stressful, pretty unsatisfactory. So whether you are very still and quiet and settled in a retreat, or you're in the full swing of life in the world and all its busyness and franticness, what is it you're not willing to pay attention to? What is it that you're ignoring? The ignoring of which leads to your suffering. And finally, I'd like to say that about these kind of topics is that, you know, the liberative lists, you know, called liberation, attain liberation, attain knowledge and vision of what's ended, come to an end when you're liberated. This liberation thing is kind of like a, can lead people to all kinds of funny behavior. Goals and comparisons and this feeling like it's all or nothing. And I like sometimes, instead of that language, I sometimes prefer to use the language of maturation. Not a few people who pursue liberation, it seems it's a little bit juvenile the way that they look at it. A little bit magical thinking and but maturation speaks to the idea of human maturation, that we become wiser, more capable, more mature. And so there's something very maturing about taking a good, deep look at your life, at what how karma operates in a way that you can see in the thought streams of your mind. And there's something very maturing about having faith in the path to liberation that gives you a kind of patience to allow it to work you rather than you climbing up the ladder as fast as you can, to allow something to mature and bubble up and grow and develop and then to flower. So to be mindful, to have vision, understanding, to stop and take a deep look at this life of ours, willing to see ourselves, to see our suffering in a new way, in a dharmic way, not a karmic way, where karmic way is just being entangled and putting layers of attachment on top of attachment. Dharmic is to see with taking attachments away, peeling away and seeing one more clearly. So I have my hope and wish that has been already fulfilled in ways I never could have imagined, that we all continue to mature together on this path. May all of us be a community that matures, and that the community matures, not just us as individuals. And may each of us contribute to the maturation of our community as a whole, for the welfare and happiness of all beings everywhere. So thank you all very, very much. And there's a few announcements to be made. So tomorrow, Sunday, the schedule will change in the morning. So you can check the schedule to see it, but the 8:15 sitting will happen just as it happens usually, but it'll be a silent sit. And now I'm supposed to announce it's a silent sit without instructions, which maybe I'd like to believe that's not really true. The silence is the instructions. There's lots of instructions. The most profound instruction comes tomorrow in the silence, if you know how to hear it. And then at 9:30, at the end of that sitting, there'll be a short dharmet and some important announcements. And this is a one event we ask everyone to come to. And the dharmet will be given by Inez. And she's been a very important teacher during the retreat. But you haven't really heard from her. So we'll have some of her wisdom and her kindness, her love coming through. And then there'll be the other things you need to know will be talked about tomorrow. So take good care of yourself and be considered how you kind of do this last hours of the retreat, so that you care for yourself properly and prepared for the transition tomorrow. Thank you.